Most people hold deep-seated values that support circular and regenerative solutions. So, what's holding us back? Welcome to the Circular Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Catherine Wheatman, and I started this podcast to help people discover why circular, regenerative, and fair solutions are better for people, planet, and prosperity. Some people think going circular means swapping a few materials or making things a bit more recyclable. But that's nowhere near enough to create a healthy, resilient and zero carbon world where we can all thrive. Many organisations are missing the game-changing potential of going circular. The disruptors in this space are using circular strategies to reimagine how to create value for all their stakeholders. They're doing better with less. We'll hear from those inspiring people who are challenging business as usual and rethinking how we design, make and use everything. You'll find the show notes and links at circulareconomypodcast.com, where you can subscribe to podcast updates, my Circular Insights newsletter, and check out my award-winning A Circular Economy Handbook. Welcome to episode 126, and thank you for being here. Today, we're off to the field of social psychology to explore how our personal values drive behaviour and what that means for sustainability and the circular economy. In a recent newsletter, I mentioned a short course I'd done with the Common Cause Foundation called Values 101. It opened my eyes to a whole new way of thinking about our behaviour and what motivates our choices, actions and interactions. The course was run by Ruth Taylor of the Common Cause Foundation, along with her colleague Tom Crompton, and today I'm talking to Ruth about some of my main takeaways from the course. The Common Cause Foundation works at the intersection of culture change and human values. And it's driven by the belief that it's possible to design societies that magnify and strengthen the cooperative and caring parts of human nature. By doing that together, we can build ways of living that are equitable and just, and that lie within our planetary boundaries. The Common Cause Foundation sees values playing a pivotal role in shaping our cultures and systems. The dominant global culture is out of balance, prioritising extrinsic values such as wealth, power and social status, in a way that's led us to the brink of destruction, with crises of poverty, inequality and climate change. The Common Cause Foundation's work shows that balance can be restored by elevating intrinsic values instead, values like community, creativity and unity with nature. Ruth Taylor has worked in the field of social and environmental change for close to 15 years. She's driven by the question of how more people can be encouraged to think, feel and act differently when it comes to the multiple and interconnected challenges we're experiencing globally. Currently, Ruth splits her time between working for the Common Cause Foundation and as a freelance narrative strategist, supporting a range of different organisations from NGOs to cultural institutions, helping them consider how their work helps shift harmful narratives towards more regenerative and just alternatives. Ruth also loves to write and her work can be found on Medium. Today, Ruth explains what values mean and how they impact our daily lives. And we talk about the perception gap, the mistaken beliefs we have about other people's values, and why that matters. We also talk about why we might not always act in line with our values, and how we can overcome that. We explore how engaging certain values could influence more sustainable and circular behaviours, and how it's relatively easy for people to become interested in topics and actions that have similar underlying principles. For example, being passionate about women's rights makes it more likely that you'll be interested in supporting other movements for equality and fairness. both for humans and other than humans. We find out how values are like muscles and can be strengthened, and we discover why we misunderstand other people's values and how that's holding back our shift to a circular and regenerative world. Let's join the conversation with Ruth Taylor, and afterwards I'll share my takeaways. Ruth, welcome to the Circular Economy podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and it's great to see you on the other side of a screen again after we spent a bit of time together when I did the Values 101 course.
Yeah.
You know, which was a real mind-blowing introduction to values and some of the stuff that we're going to talk about today. So the Common Cause Foundation does a lot of research and other work on values. But what do we mean when we talk about values?
It's a really good question to start with, because when we talk about values at Common Cause, we are referring to quite a specific definition of values. Values, as we talk about them in the sort of in our popular vernacular, tend to focus on someone's sort of characteristics. So we might think of, you know, someone has brilliant values. They're really kind and caring and trustworthy and loyal. And we might sort of list off a load of personality traits that we think showcase somebody's good values. Or we might think about our organisational values, the sorts of values that as businesses or organisations we come together and say, you know, these are the values that we want to direct our work. But in the field of social psychology, which is the body of academic study that Common Cause draws on, there's actually a really specific definition. So values, in the way that we talk about them, are the principles or the standards that we each carry as human beings throughout our lives that guide and inform our thoughts, our attitudes, and our actions. They are influenced by the kind of wider world that we're a part of. And importantly, they influence how we collectively decide to design our societies. So they do include things like trustworthiness and honesty and kindness, the things that we might immediately think of when we're talking about values. But for our work, they also include other values. So things like wealth or excitement or power or self-discipline. So they're a bit broader than we might initially think of when we're drawn to the idea of values.
Mm. So I guess it's more than just the principles that we think are important in how we live and behave and so on. Mm-hmm. But it's about what we value in our lives, which comes back to the kind of the wealth and success and so on. So you mentioned a little bit about how those values kind of play into our daily lives. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Mm. Yeah, so our values they're ways that we they help us prioritize what we want to do or think in any given moment in our lives, I suppose. What's important to us? What do we think is worth striving for in our lives? We will have a huge range of values, and we almost pick up a range of values at any given moment and a sort of choosing between them as to what we want to foreground. So it's not that values, you know, we just have a specific set of values and those are the ones we carry. We're much more complicated than that as human beings. We pick and choose between a really broad range of values that help us to determine what we're going to do in our lives, how we're going to behave, what actions we want to take, what we want to believe. Some of those values are really long-standing, what psychologists often call dispositional values. They're the sort of values that become really important to us, and they tend to be fairly stable. They're important to us, you know, over many, many years, over even our lifetimes. And those are influenced by some of our early experiences as humans. So things like our education and maybe how we've been parented and are, whether we have a religious faith or not, and maybe the political context we've grown up in, et cetera, et cetera. But values are also what we might call primable. We receive so many, often very subtle, kind of social cues in our day-to-day lives. And those almost kind of ignite or engage a particular value for us in any given moment. So I might, I don't know, see an advert and it might momentarily make me place greater importance on something like wealth or something like status or my public image or something like that. Maybe that's not a value that is really important to me, kind of as a default, but my attention can be drawn to it. And so values are both things that are very personal, but also culturally influenced.
Yeah, and that's interesting, and it kind of comes back to what you said about needing to sometimes choose between different values, that in lots of areas, particularly of modern life, there's no perfect answer a lot of the time, and when we're choosing whether to do A, B, or nothing at all, I guess we're trying to then think about which of our values are most important here. And to just pick out an example from the course, we talked about maybe moving away from using the car all the time, and that people might, have this value of wanting to live a more sustainable life and to reduce their carbon footprint. But then when it comes to how do I get to work, maybe there's nowhere to park your bike when you get there. Or maybe you're worried about how you're going to look, how your office clothing's going to be when you've cycled on a rainy day. So all those
Absolutely.
kind of things come in, and I guess that can often end up in this sort of what we called on the course the action values gap, that you've got those values, but if it isn't easy to put them into action, or if you're getting those signals that you talked about of the other values in the media, in what you're seeing from advertisers and so on, then that can kind of lead you away from the things that you think are really essentially important.
Yeah, absolutely. The values action gap is often referred to as something to sort of explain away values, to sort of say, see, values can't be that important because people say they hold, protecting the environment to be really important, and then they do an action that isn't in alignment with that value. So as you said, I want to go to work. I claim to have to place a lot of importance on protecting the environment, but I choose to drive and not cycle. People might say, "See, we can't trust values because they don't always lead to a particular pro-social or pro-environmental action." I guess we have to consider that there are lots of often really random factors that play into what we do and don't do as human beings. So, as you said, I might hold the protecting the environment to be really important, but I'm weighing up other values when I decide to act on something. So yes, protecting the environment is really important to me, but maybe so is my safety, and maybe there aren't cycle paths between my house and my office. And so I think to myself, I have to place the priority in this given moment on security values instead of on a more universalism value of the environment. Or maybe the options just aren't there. Maybe I maybe yeah there's no path at all. There's no I just couldn't cycle safely. The council in my area just hasn't made the provision for me to be able to travel on my bike, to then be able to store my bike when I get to work, etc. And so it's not possible for me. Or maybe I'm disabled and I don't have the equipment I need to be able to travel by bike instead of in my car. There are so many reasons, but what we know from values is that when we look at lots of different behaviors, so if I've said protecting the environment is really important to me, and we look at, okay, we've looked at how I travel to work, but if we look at my diet, if we look at my consumer behavior, if we look at, how often do I fly, if we look at, do I recycle, etc. If we look at other behaviors associated with that value of protecting the environment, that value actually becomes one of the best predictors that we have to be able to identify pro-environmental behaviours. So we do see a values action gap when we look at individual behaviours, but overall, when we aggregate out, values are actually a really powerful predictor of behaviour. So, nothing is really, really simple. We're complicated creatures, and the world we live in is complicated. But for me, values are an incredible way of thinking about social and environmental change that often is overlooked too easily, because they are a huge factor in helping us as individuals and as societies decide, how we're going to live together on this planet.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the sort of big takeaways from the course for me. So, is there a common language to describe these values and to help us think about what kind of things might be important to different groups of people?
I suppose a common language is debated. There are different groups of psychologists over different periods of research over the last 60 years or so will use different words. On the whole, values have been grouped by researchers into categories based on kind of compatible values. So we have buckets, if you like, that we refer to. So I might talk about universalism values or benevolence values, etc., to refer to groups of values that are similar. And at Common Cause, we talk about two very specific groupings of values, intrinsic and extrinsic values. And we focus in on those because they have a particular relevance to social and environmental change, and that's what we aim to do as an organisation. So intrinsic values are values that are sort of inherently rewarding to us. So they would include things like social justice and equality and broad-mindedness and community and responsibility and things like that. They also include values that relate to a feeling of autonomy, so something like freedom. And extrinsic values are values which rely on some kind of external approval or reward. They're really focused on how people think of us. So things like power, wealth, authority, status, public image. And you sort of implied in your question, are there do different groups of people hold different values? That doesn't really seem to be the case, which I think is counterintuitive for lots of people. As human beings, we are influenced, we hold and are influenced by a really broad range of values, intrinsic and extrinsic. And it's important, I think, to understand that extrinsic values are not bad values. Thinking about wealth and power and image, etc., are not bad things to do. At some points in our lives, we do need to think of those things. And, we're social creatures, being conscious of what others think of us helps our own sense of identity, gives us a sense of well-being, etc. So it's not that some values are good and some values are bad. It's about balance. How much are we focusing all our attention on one set of values over another? For groups of people, we might feel this sense of kind of us and them. I'm someone who really places lots of importance on the nice values of intrinsic, social justice and equality, etc. And those people over there, they place loads of importance on values that I have decided are bad, so power, wealth, etc. What we find is that actually, the majority of people do place importance on intrinsic values. That doesn't mean that we're all going to agree on what a sort of instantiation of an intrinsic value looks like in practice. We're not all going to agree on the same policy, vote the same way, etc. But it seems like there is an underlying desire for us to be able to make decisions by foregrounding those intrinsic values. And I think that's really important to help us to find common ground with people that maybe we disagree with on more tangible outcomes. And the research does suggest that if you are somebody who identifies as sort of liberal or progressive, we tend to assume that other people are not as intrinsically motivated as we are. So we have a bit of a bias there, which I think probably harms the way that we approach conversations with others, when we're talking about our kind of collective societies and the wider world in which we're a part.
And on the course, we looked at some of the research around, the numbers of people favouring the intrinsic values, the more compassionate ones, versus the extrinsic values. And the numbers were quite startling, weren't they? If we kind of go back to what you were talking about a minute ago, the sort of political leanings that we might have, we might kind of assume that it would be, I don't know, a 50-50 split, but that wasn't the case at all, was it?
No, absolutely. And I do think it's surprising. People's assumptions are that if you are somebody who places lots of priority on extrinsic value, you're going to be more likely to vote for, I don't know, a far right party, for example. And that can be the case. You know, that it's not that it that's never true. But we do find that people who are maybe on the right of the political spectrum hold intrinsic values and but believe that those values are going to be sort of met at the societal level through investing in a kind of capitalist system, I suppose. So, you know, this sense of, well, I really love my community. I want people in my community to be happy and healthy and have a lovely life. And I believe that is going to happen through the pursuit of, I don't know, trickle down economics. It's and whereas other people might be like, well, I really, you know, value my community and I want them to be happy and healthy, et cetera. And so I want there to be brilliant state investment in services. I want communities to be encouraged to come together and support one another, et cetera. So just because we have the same value doesn't mean we're going to necessarily agree on what should be done about all of the many challenges that we face. But it gives us a starting point to start saying, well, okay, if you believe that value and I believe this value, let me explain to you know, why I think this value is sort of shown through this particular policy or this particular action. It feels to me like a less divisive way of talking about difference.
Yeah, so kind of starting with what we have in common rather than what divides us. And just coming
Completely.
back to that research, I guess one of the startling things for me was finding that there were two big stats, that around 3/4 of people favour those intrinsic values, and yet a very similar number, 3/4 of people, assume that everybody else around them favours the extrinsic values. And I guess some of the reason for that is because we see so much emphasis on extrinsic values, the meat, what's in the media, what's on TV, advertising, corporate kind of ambition and wanting to grow and so on.
Absolutely.
But it kind of seeing how this played out and seeing what happened when people realized that actually most of society doesn't think like this, most of society thinks the same way as you do and has a similar set of values, and the kind of game-changing potential of knowing that and then being able to think, well, how do I change the conversation by making it, perhaps starting with values and by, to use your phrase, foregrounding more about intrinsic values to kind of bring it back into people's field of vision. That felt like it could be absolutely transformational.
I really agree. It's an area of research that No, on some of my darkest days where I'm looking at the state of the world and you just feel like you want to curl into bed and hide under the covers, that piece of research really gives me some hope. I feel that there's huge untapped potential there. So as you said, you're completely right on those stats. It's about three quarters of people in the UK where there is research, but we're finding similar stats in other countries where research is being done, shows that about three quarters of people do place more importance on intrinsic values, and they drastically underappreciate, they kind of assume that others place far less importance on intrinsic values than they actually do. So we think that other people place much more prioritization on extrinsic values than actually seems to be the case. And that has lots of possible kind of implications. One, it can make us feel very alone, feel very kind of hopeless in the face of the challenges that we feel. This sense of I wish the world was different, but I seem to be really alone in that belief, and so change can never happen. I think that's one thing. I think there's something about division. So we tend to think that people that we know, so our loved ones, our friends and our family, people we know well, we sort of think they have intrinsic values. It's all these other people that, I'm not in contact with that I can make these big sweeping assumptions about. And as you rightly said, I think a lot of that comes down to the narratives we hear that surround us in our day-to-day lives. That can be, direct messaging, the way that media stories are framed, for example. I can't turn on the TV or the radio or read a newspaper here in the UK without hearing something about benefit fraud, and all of these people are trying to sort of rinse the system for their own benefit, which subtly and tacitly implies to me, well, all these people are just out for themselves, and I would never do that. My loved ones would never do that. But there's obviously plenty of people out there who aren't like me. But it can also be even more subtle than that. My experiences of just living my life. My colleague uses an example of, we go to the library, and I can't just freely walk into the library. There's kind of security barriers that I have to go through, kind of reminding me people can't be trusted. People are out for themselves. So there are so many ways that we have this idea sort of embedded in our thinking over time. And I think that's one of the reasons why we have this kind of gap in our perception of what people really value and what we think they value. And it's really difficult to for us as social creatures to feel enabled to then act in line with our own values when we're looking around and thinking, oh, no one else is, and I don't want to look foolish, I don't want to stand out, so I'll just pretend I don't have these values too, and I won't sort of stand up for them boldly, which is a real shame when we're thinking about the, social and environmental challenges.
Although it's interesting how small things can make big changes overnight. I remember
Absolutely.
somebody after the plastic bag tax was introduced in the UK, there was somebody interviewed in a vox pop on the radio who was saying that he'd been using a bag for life for years and years, but what he'd noticed was now when he walked into a shop, instead of people looking down the nose at him like he was some sort of tree hugger, it was now normal. So
Absolutely.
just, very simple mood changes in society. And I think there were lots of interesting takeaways in terms of how to begin the conversations, whether that's, with a campaign or an actual conversation, but how to kind of try and draw people together around a value that was likely to be common. And then was it the leapfrog effect of being able to then, kind of move from that value to ones that were more specific to your particular organisation or cause? So is there anything that if you were sharing tips with people who are listening to this and want to help more organisations, policymakers, and people in society, think about how the circular economy could move us towards a better world. What could people start with that would kind of give them a route into using values in a good way?
Yeah, it's a really great question. Like all things, it's a complicated answer. I don't think there's a silver bullet in any of this. And values are always one component of a larger offering, I suppose, the work that any one organization does. I would love to see more organizations thinking about their role in or their ability through their work to be strengthening intrinsic values culturally and weakening extrinsic values. So that, most obviously, I suppose, is done through the way you communicate with your various audiences. Are you trying to appeal to somebody based on their motivations of wanting a healthier, more regenerative world for people now, people in the future, and the more than human life that we share our planet with? Or are we trying to motivate them through reference to more extrinsic values? You're going to save money, you're going to be able to be a more sustainable or thriving business, etc. I often feel, and that really comes back to this idea that we tend to misunderstand the values of others. And so we think, well, I'm really motivated by creating a better planet, but I'm sure other people actually are only thinking about what's in their bank account or how cool they look in front of others. And so I need to speak to them through reference to their more extrinsic values. What that does is it just further strengthens those values kind of in our cultural surround, the very values that underpin our capitalist neoliberal system, our extractive culture. So it's a bit kind of shooting ourselves in the foot, which I think is it's done completely unintentionally. But I think that's the first place to start is review your own work, consider what I like to call the cultural values footprint of your work. To understand, where are we potentially unintentionally strengthening values that we don't want to see strengthened? You can look at your programs. We have seen organizations boldly design new programs of work that maybe they would never have done before. So an organization working on the environment who suddenly is campaigning against advertising that maybe actually has nothing to do with environmental footprint. It's not advertising on cars. It's not advertising, for high carbon activity. It's all advertising that strengthens an extrinsic value because they see the link between values that we celebrate and normalize in our society and the ways that people then interact with social and environmental issues. Maybe I think there's a flip side. Are there ways that your programs can help people to engage more with their intrinsic values? There are certain things, if you're an organization that's working in schools, how can you campaign for like more open, collaborative classroom settings that engage and strengthen young people's intrinsic values instead of sort of authoritarian, success-based school systems that we so often see? Being outside in nature, there are programs where we can encourage more open space for people. That's another way that research has shown that that strengthens intrinsic values, simply being outside in our natural world. And lastly, I'd say, this work at the moment, I think organizations are very quick to say, that's one step removed from our kind of our mission. It feels too large. And for me, I think that's a real byproduct of the way that we have structured civil society. We sort of have our siloed issues and we feel that we can speak about nothing else but our siloed issues, when actually, when you look at them from the point of view of values, you can see how interconnected they are. I think it's vital to be able to get out of our silos and work across cause, but as well across fields. So being able to, work with organizations who help shape our cultural waters, who actually have nothing to do with the social and environmental issue that you're specifically working on. I think that's really important too.
Yeah, so lots there. And I think you've shared some links to your work for the Common Cause Foundation and elsewhere, and we'll put those in the show notes so people can follow up. And I think particularly the article about using narratives to help people kind of connect with intrinsic values that are more likely to generate positive changes in sustainability behavior. So that's great. And Ruth, thinking about the kind of the bigger picture, with values or further afield, if you could wave a magic wand and change one thing to help make a better world, what would that be and why?
I mean, it's a brilliant question, and one I'm sure I could answer with lots of different variations on the same thing. For me, I want to one day wake up in a culture where values around equality and care for one another and our planet is normalized to the same, if not a greater extent than, the need for us to be wealthy and to look good and to be seen in a certain way by our peers and to be successful, etc. I want to be in a culture where that is upheld and celebrated and championed, and we see that as a normal way of living together. I think that's good for our mental health as human beings, but I think it would, incredible transformation and liberation could like flow from that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And yeah, we saw so many examples of how things were transformed when people had really connected with those values. And before we tell people how they can connect and find out more, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Nothing particular. I suppose a call to action of that. I really believe that in the face of the complicated challenges that we are facing globally, there is a need to be bolder and more ambitious and to go deeper with the level of transformation we are seeking. And for me, values are a critical part of that recipe, I suppose. So I'd sort of invite people to step boldly and excitedly into a new approach to change, which I think values are a great way of doing.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. So, Ruth, how can people find out more and get in touch with you and the Common Cause Foundation?
Yeah, so we love chatting to people. You can find our work at commoncausefoundation.org. We run a course called Values 101, which kind of is a deep dive into some of the values literature and some of the principles or practices that we think can be lifted out of some of that academic research. You can also find us reluctantly on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn as well. I've recently moved away from Twitter, which I very much loved at one point. And I'm on Medium for writing as well. And if this has sparked anything for you, ignited an interest, do get in touch. We'd love to chat.
Great stuff. Thanks, Ruth. And thank you for giving us such a brilliant quick overview of the amazing work that you and your colleagues at the Common Cause Foundation are doing. And it feels to me as if values could be so important in helping us connect more deeply with other people and have those conversations to change, and that tuning into our own values can help us make decisions that we can all be proud of. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
As Ruth explained, values are the principles or standards that we try to live by, and they influence so many aspects of our lives, including what we buy, how we live, who we're friends with, how we vote, and maybe even what work we choose to do. Ruth talked about two kinds of values, extrinsic and intrinsic. To recap, extrinsic values rely on external approval or rewards, such as wealth, power, and public image. Intrinsic values, on the other hand, are more inherently rewarding, creating feelings of community, friendship, love, and creative enjoyment. And they prioritize benevolence, social justice, caring for others and for our living world. Most of our values are long-standing, informed by our early experiences and the values of our families, communities, culture, and religion. However, we can be influenced or primed by the media, by the values of organisations and institutions, by adverts, even by the subtle messages in artwork. And while those influences are likely to be temporary or transient, they can still affect our choice in that moment, maybe causing us to downplay a deeper rooted value. It's important to remember that there's no such thing as a good or a bad value. To live well-rounded lives, we need to be able to draw on a wide range of values. But it's also important that these values are kept in balance. It can be difficult to stay true to our values, especially given the complexities of real life, with snap decisions, budgets, perhaps needing to defer to others' needs, and so on. For example, you might want to reduce your environmental footprint and use your bicycle for commuting. But then you realise there's no secure bike storage at work, plus you're worried about busy roads. In other words, there can be a gap between actions and values. So does that mean that we're not really guided by our values? No, it means that while specific choices might not align, the research shows that when looking at our general behaviours, then a pro-environmental value would show up in less flying, less consumption, which charities we support, and so on. I talked about one of my standout learnings from the Values 101 course, that around 3/4 of people believe that most other people favour those extrinsic values of wealth, power, image, and so on. But those beliefs are wrong. For the UK, the research shows around 3/4 of people place more importance on intrinsic values of benevolence, community, equality, and caring for nature. And there are similar findings in other countries. In other words, when it comes to values, most of us do want a more equal, caring, and restorative world. That big misperception is creating barriers for circular behavioural change and for other ways to create healthier, fairer societies. It makes us less confident about expressing or living our own values. So we feel there's no hope of change because most other people don't support things like peace, harmony, and protecting our planet. For me, this was a real aha moment, opening up all sorts of ways to improve how we engage people in circular and regenerative solutions. There's also a strengthening effect. We can think of values like muscles. The more we exercise them, the stronger they become. Being intentional about how you foreground your values and avoiding reflecting values that you don't hold can help others to understand what's important to you, what you stand for, and what kind of world you want to see. And that applies to individuals and organisations. As an example, the increasing focus on diversity and inclusion means a broader range of people appearing in adverts and TV shows, creating a sense that our culture is more diverse, and then diversity feels normal rather than unusual. So, how can we use values to engage people in circular products and services or to support circular economy policies? Let's go back to our tendency to misunderstand the values of other people. For example, we're motivated to create a healthier planet and society, yet we think other people are only thinking about their bank accounts or how cool they look in front of others. That assumption means our communications probably aim to appeal to people's extrinsic values, which then helps to strengthen the very same values that are working against our cause and that underpin our extractive capitalist system. Instead, when we're talking about the product, its benefits, and our businesses, we should communicate in ways that appeal to intrinsic values to help strengthen those value muscles so we're more likely to engage people. So I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Circular Economy podcast. Thank you to our very knowledgeable and thought-provoking guest this week, Ruth Taylor of the Common Cause Foundation. And thanks also to Manda Scott of the Accidental Gods podcast for pointing me towards Ruth's work. You can find out more about Ruth Taylor and the Common Cause Foundation and check out the other links we mentioned in the show notes at circulareconomypodcast.com. The Circular Economy Podcast is brought to you by Rethink Global, the company I started to help you succeed with circular. You can find information on my talks, workshops and advice, plus circular economy resources at rethinkglobal.info. And you can connect with me, Catherine Wheatman, on LinkedIn. I believe we can all help make the circular economy happen through the choices we make at work and in our everyday lives. Buying pre-used, keeping what we have for longer, repairing it and making sure it has another life. Those choices send strong signals to companies and governments, making it clear we all want a better, circular and regenerative future. We can do better with less. We can all help spread the word too. Talk about the circular economy and help other people find this podcast by leaving us a rating and a review on your podcast app. If you're just starting out with the circular economy, why not check out our Getting Started playlist on the podcast homepage? You could also buy my award-winning book, A Circular Economy Handbook, How to Build a More Resilient, Competitive and Sustainable Business. It takes you through the concepts and practicalities with hundreds of real examples from all around the world. We've made it easier for you to find episodes on the key circular economy strategies, or for a market sector, or specific countries. Check out the Interactive Podcast Index. There's a link on the podcast homepage at circulareconomypodcast.com. Thanks so much for listening to the end. And if you like what you're hearing, please hit subscribe. And I'll see you next time.